This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the evening edition. Caroline and Uma with you. We're talking today about something very close to my heart, Caroline. Edible urban gardening.
Since when was that close to your heart, Uma?
As of a couple of weeks ago when I went for one of these edible urban gardening courses.
You can't even
say it properly, I know.
Edible urban gardening.
Yes. Now, what is it? Well, edible landscaping is the practical integration of food plants within an ornamental or decorative setting. Urban gardening or urban agriculture is the practice of cultivating, processing, and distributing food in and around the city.
Right. You lost you at hello, but you know, luckily we have guests in the studio to help elaborate.
Who are actual experts.
Experts at it, not just someone who picked up a class a couple of weeks ago.
That's right. So we've got Shaolin, who's a graphic designer and a co-founder of Eats, Shoots and Roots, a social enterprise that aims to build communities through growing food, and which is especially in urban areas, as well as Nova Siciliana. Did I pronounce that correct, Nova?
Yes, Nova Siciliana.
There we go, Nova Siciliana, a permaculture designer and founder of Cultivate Central, a collective that aims to reunite urban cultures with nature by weaving edible spaces into the urban fabric of our society.
Wow, that is a very impressive description.
Nova, what does that mean?
Can you tell us, let's start with permaculture.
Tough one, very, very big body of knowledge. Yeah. But in a very simple sense, it means three things. Earth care, people care, sharing your surplus. And how do you do that? You think more about the energy you use, you think more about where your food comes from, and you think about lowering your impact. And living more sustainably. But you do this through design. So how do you design your habitat? How do you design growing your food? And so on. So it's a huge body of knowledge.
Right, and it seems to be a bit of a perception shift from, I suppose, how we normally look at food. Can we just start with that? And what made the both of you decide to get into it? What made you decide to care, you know, as opposed to just going to the supermarket, picking something up because it's easy, it's convenient, it's efficient,
and
it
works. And it's also cheap.
It's cheap,
well.
It works.
And convenient, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe shall
I? Yeah, I guess for myself, there came a point when I visited my friend's place in Batu Arang, and she had a little farm where she grew her own food. She ran courses from there. It was called Embun Pagi. And so Sabina ran this place, and I went to this place in Batu Arang, and it was stunning and at the same time mind-boggling because I didn't know half the things that she was growing. Didn't understand how they grew, didn't know how to identify them.
Oh, please. Please don't tell me you're the type of individual who thinks chicken comes from trees.
No, but I mean, I've always been a PJ city girl kind of thing. So being in that setting, it really sort of threw me off and made me realize that, okay, there are a lot of things that I actually don't know about nature, about my own food, where it grows. And it's something that's really important because if I don't know these things and if anything happens, then how am I supposed to fend for myself or, you know, just be able to grow food for myself.
All right, so for you, it was the hunger for knowledge and, afraid of starving to death. Nova?
For me, it really started with composting. The black gold in my life. Yeah. My dad was an organic composter, but this was a very long time ago. So for me, it was very natural to just always compost. And from composting, then what do you do with your compost? Yeah, you grow food. So that was just the natural progression.
But of course, it's incredibly important for your own personal health as well, because you know there's one step where you read the back of the label of everything to know, you know, what's in it. But of course, if you know exactly where your food is coming from, it means you know exactly what you're eating, and that's the best way to manage health, disease, all sorts of things.
Isn't that what the label is for, though?
Yeah, but still.
Okay.
If you know your tomato came from a farm or even from your own backyard, you know exactly what went into it.
Yeah.
Right?
Or what didn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like and pesticides and fertilizer and what goes into it.
Because that's not on the back of a label.
That's definitely not part of it.
Now, our trainee producer, Rahma Pauzi, caught up with Azlina Matsalem. She's the Assistant Director of Landscape Department and Head of the Community Garden Initiative at the Subang Jaya City Council. And she asked her what triggered the Community Garden Project and what are MPSJ's inspirations?
I've been here for 12 years, and in urban areas, you can see that the residents have been readily planting at green areas. Whenever they find a green patch, they tend to want to plant. Okay, you can see sugarcane, banana, papaya. We call it illegal planting, kebun. Okay, for MPSJ, it's illegal because at time they will be looking after their plot tediously, and most of the time they will be abandoning their plots, usually because they have problems or something, and then neighbors will come complaining to the council. So this was what actually triggered the allotment project, allotment garden project, because we want to legalize it. We want to legalize it in a proper way, regulated. Yes.
Okay, that's interesting. So what are the councils that are active in building edible gardens as far as you're concerned?
Okay. We were inspired by Kuala Selangor District Council. It's a district. It was done at this one small housing area. They had this one big reserve area, buffer zone, I think. So they had this, all residents came and they had a big plot of land. You have to understand it's a district area, so they have very vast land. So we went there, we were inspired, and then we went to Kuching Utara City Council. There they were also using buffer zones, which is also big. And there are some other cities such as Petaling Jaya City Council. I think they have small development, and Putrajaya Corporation. That's all that we know in Malaysia.
Is that going to be the future, I guess, regulation of these sorts of plots? Is this what's necessary, or it's my garden, right? I should be able to grow whatever I want.
Well, I think what she was also talking about is, you know, every neighborhood you'll have the uncle or auntie who like maybe has the corner lot or lives in front of the park, and then they'll adopt the corner outside their house, yes, and opposite. But that
fair
has
enough
been our, that we have a rich culture of that. I mean, people
of stealing
other people's land. No. I mean, you know,
making
people
use
grow
of
food,
what's not
yeah,
being
yeah,
used.
Yeah, exactly. Of being resourceful, making use of the space that nobody else is using,
right,
and just growing some serai, pandan, curry leaves, and betik, and yeah, stuff like that. But I get a point. I mean, it sometimes if it's not taken care of, or then it becomes an eyesore.
So it's an initiative born of irresponsible gardening, then, is it fair to say?
Of
it sounds
need,
like it, doesn't
I
it?
Think. It's more of need. Like, a lot of people look for spaces. Like, people come to us and they always ask us, oh, can we just start growing here? And we're like, oh, we don't know. You have to ask your council and all that. And some people just take over plots and all that. So I think there is a need for people to claim some space or to grow some stuff for themselves.
And it's been a thing where, you know, edible gardening or growing food here is, you know, we've had it's waxed and waned, you know, like during the war years you hear about your grandma growing the tapioca and growing all of that they need, and I think it's that. And then the lawn took over and beautifying your space according to the lawn,
yes, of course, with the
garden. So, and then now it's again, oh okay, maybe growing food is a more productive way to use your space.
All right, and of course a more urgent need at this point in time.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that urgent need and why more and more Malaysians are taking up urban edible gardening, if not just as a hobby, but as a way of life. Don't go anywhere. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is the Evening Edition. Caroline and Uma with you. We're talking urban edible gardening. We've got Shaolin and Nova Siciliana with us, both urban edible gardeners themselves. And what's wrong with the supermarket? That's what I want to know, because there seems to be a large group of Malaysians who have taken up growing vegetables and growing herbs. I mean, because supermarket's pretty cheap these days. You know, they ship in everything in bulk, in mass. Some of the fruits are pretty tasty.
And there are plenty of options.
And there are plenty
the
of
variety
options.
Variety is great. Yes. You get your rosemary now, you get, you know, all of that.
So why are people, or why are some urban dwellers turning away from that?
I think the whole organic sort of like move to go organic, the wanting to know what goes into your food before it reaches your table, just wanting to know more is the primary driver. And then, of course, maybe more people can afford to pay a bit more for food that is healthier, so to speak. But a lot of people also cannot afford to pay for food that
I'm sorry, I don't understand. So is it a more cost effective option or not?
No, I think you mean growing food, yes. I wouldn't say it's the most cost effective option. I think it's an option that gives you more information about how that food is grown and what you're eating.
Yeah,
for me anyways. I don't know about Shao.
Yeah, I think in terms of produce, there's a lot of varieties that you can get from supermarket, but then you don't realize that a lot of it doesn't come from Malaysia. A lot of it might come from China or other countries around us. And
China, they put all sorts of things.
Watermelons that go bust.
That's what I'm trying to ascertain, right? Are we trying to go with fears and we don't know what certain countries, let's say certain countries, are putting into your food? Or two, are we supposed to just be a little bit more responsible? Are we going on that guilty, the guilty road trip? I'm not worried about my carbon footprint, or I should be. Is that what you're banking on?
I think there are two different things. At the end of the day, we all just want to be sustainable edible gardeners. Mm. And the two things that we're thinking about is, the carbon miles of where your food's coming from. If you can grow it on your doorstep, why not? It's just easier and faster. Mm. And the other part is the chemicals that go into your chemical fertilizers, pesticides and all that. And that affects our health, obviously. And I think diseases or like cancer and all that, they're very common these days. They're kind of like the flu in some ways.
Having said that, we don't want to incite panic.
No. So I think health is important. Just understanding that your food has been grown without all these chemicals, I think that's a nice insurance for you at least.
Okay. Now, both of you, I guess, are part of very small movements. Is that the way forward to get this message out? Is it a case of startup movements and a collective of, a numerous number of small movements to get the message out, or do you need something larger to create awareness?
Yeah, I do think it's important to have small movements because we've seen other larger movements that can go on a bigger scale, like they can reach out to schools at a time, whereas for us, we reach out to individuals, per workshop and all that. But we see that these individuals, they kind of get more interested into it, they're a bit more passionate, and they come from a sort of more intense passion for it. Whereas if you go affect the school children might not be so passionate about it. And from the courses and trainings that we've run, there are other people that have come up with their own sort of enterprises as well, other small movements. So we sort of see a really good chain effect in that sense.
How long has the movement been around for? Because I'm just wondering, how much of a fad it is. These things sort of come and they might just drop off the face of the earth.
There was a huge hydroponics movement when I was younger.
That's
my
right.
Parents and I grew hydroponic vegetables in our garden. They tasted terrible.
I'm glad you went with vegetables, but all right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing about like things like you mentioned hydroponics, it's true. But there's just a method of growing. But the point is, you guys were growing food. And I think the question is, what? To your question earlier, Caroline, why are people growing their own food is the key thing. And people just want to, there's more awareness in the environment and people just want to embrace earth care a bit more. So I think in this case, it may not just be, it's a growing trend, but I think it will be one that will stay.
Well, after all, it's sustainable, isn't it? Yes.
It's just, we all just want to be more friendlier to the earth. We want to embrace that.
A growing trend rather than a fad. Then.
Yeah.
I guess that's a more positive way of looking at it. But, let's talk about where Malaysia is at maintaining this green urban environment in comparison to, say, some of our neighbouring countries. Our trainee producer, Rahman Fauzi, caught up with Azlina Mat Salim. She is the Assistant Director of Landscape Department and Head of the Community Garden Initiative at the Subang Jaya City Council. Here's what she had to say about that.
Yes. In fact, I think Malaysia is a little bit lagging in this, right? The Ministry of Agriculture just set up their Jabatan Pertanian Bandar last year, okay? And if you see Singapore, I think Singapore is already been advanced in that. So we should be catching up.
What's your hope? What's your ambition for landscape in urban areas in Selangor, in Malaysia, for example? Like, what do you want to see? And if you can compare that with other countries, or what's your dreams?
We are in centuries where costs have been escalating, right? So I think my hope is that the urbanites use this opportunity to harvest their food resources. To me, you see, when all the prices of the vegetables and everything is high, you can always save that when you when you start planting, you just need to have patience. The nations want to develop a green community. I think it should be our target.
Azlina Mat Salim from the Subang Jaya City Council. Tell me, everyone will raise this issue of cost of living escalation and, you know, grow your own vegetables, save some money. But like you said, Nova, it may not necessarily be the cheapest option. So, I mean, is that the right argument to make and to encourage people, or is that just a myth?
About what? It being the... I'm going to burst people's bubbles a bit here. It takes time. It takes a lot of trial and error to grow your own food. And it takes a lot of patience.
When you say error...
your
tomatoes will come out shriveled.
Or they don't bloom. Right. Or, you know, or you're like, oh, you know. And so it can be frustrating. So it should... I don't buy that argument. I think you grow food because number one, I mean, you do want to know what goes into your food, but you have to be prepared that it will take time and effort. But the point that she was making about how, you know, Singapore is way advanced in terms of getting
urban. I wanted to ask you about that because I think it does depend on how committed you are to the cause, but I haven't seen this in Singapore. I mean, what do they have? An HDB little garden on the balcony? Is that what happens?
It's remarkable. They're like 400, more than 400 community gardens in Singapore. And at the bottom of the HDBs, they will cordon off spaces. And the thing about it is it's very... I mean, people come together in the garden. And some use an allotment scheme. So you get your own allotment and you garden there. Others are in parks. Some are in rooftops. So it's a real growing... They're way advanced. I moved to Singapore 18 months ago thinking I was going to bring permaculture there, but they are, like, you know, growing on rooftops and...
But like most things in Singapore, then are we right to assume that it is heavily regulated, and is that what's needed here?
They have NParks, a body that is that really helps you. Okay, I'll give you an example. So now my neighbours and I, we're going to start our community garden. So the first thing we did was get people to be supportive of the group. We always say it's about the people rather than the plants. So we've gathered about 40 interested individuals, young, old, different demographics. They've said yes. And NParks comes in and says, okay, tell us where you want to do it. We will get the approvals for you, or we will link you up to the division or the department.
Right, so cutting through the red tape.
Yeah, cutting through. And it just makes it so much easier. So then a community grassroots rep will be there and he will help you, you know, get your water access and things like that. So these are the things if you want to expedite, but it's about the people, not the plants.
That sexies it up for you.
It does. Well, also, I think that's, if there's one lesson we can learn from Singapore, is that they make facilitating of these processes very simple. If it's a good cause, they actually make it easy for you to attain that good cause, right?
I just don't like compliments.
makes my blood boil as well.
And we have to say it.
We're talking about urban edible gardening with Nova, Ceciliana and Shaolin. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after the news. BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan.
Good evening, I'm Caroline O.
Today we're talking about urban edible gardening. We've got Shaolin, who's a graphic designer and co-founder of Eats, Shoots and Roots, which is a social enterprise that aims to build communities through growing food, especially in urban areas, as well as Nova Ceciliana, a permaculture designer and founder of Cultivate Central, which is a collective that aims to reunite urban cultures with nature by weaving edible spaces into the urban fabric in which we live.
And we've spent the past half an hour trying to define what they do
exactly. We've done it quite well. I think people understand now. We can move on.
Let's take credit for that.
We will. And let's move on to how such things benefit communities at large. I mean, we've spoken about how it benefits the individual. You know, there are health reasons, knowing where your food comes from, what you're eating, no pesticides, insecticides, etc. But what about communities as a whole? Shaolin, you know, you say you approach person by person. Now, tell us about the larger impact.
Yeah, in terms of communities, there are a lot of people that come for our courses, and we always get asked the same question: who are the people that come to your courses? And it's really hard for us to define a segment of society because we have young people, old people, people of different races, different religions, and people are always so perplexed as to how we can actually attract this mix of a crowd.
And is there a common factor?
The common factor is that everybody is kind of tired of, you know, being bombarded with all this information about their food and how bad it is. And they want to take a proactive step to grow their own food, at least, or understand where their food comes from. So,
well I guess another problem with that, and you know, we were talking what's wrong with the supermarket. I guess one of the things that is wrong with the supermarket or the global supermarket is everywhere you go, the food is exactly the same. Every shelf you look at, whether it's in Malaysia, in London, in Singapore, you find the same kind of food, right? So there's a certain boredom there as well.
Well, there's a little bit of comfort in that. You want to know that a carrot looks like a carrot at the end of the day.
Yes, but Caroline, what if I told you that the carrot you're buying at the supermarket isn't what carrots look like at all?
Carrots used to be purple.
It may not even be a carrot. Right.
But yeah, sorry, communities as a whole.
Yeah, so in terms of that, I think we bring a lot of communities together that wouldn't have actually mixed outside of the gardening world. So I think that's a really interesting part of it. And also the other community garden projects that have come up, like in Tamantun, there's a TTDI edible project, and also they've gathered a lot of people on their side. And we see all these small communities sprout out because of something that we did maybe 6 months or 1 year before. So I think that's something that we can all really be proud of, you know, that things are moving in the right direction.
Yeah. I suppose it's a little bit difficult, but when you're trying to recruit individual by individual, but do you see, I suppose, big corporates trying to come on? Like you mentioned Tamantun, and right, mm-hmm. right, how there is a little bit of a community getting together to do this. Can like corporates come on? Say BFM wants to have a little garden of our own.
Oh, most certainly. I mean, currently, the thing that Cultivate Central tries to focus on is also to work with developers, because developers have the space and they have access to the community. So one such corporate we've been working on with in Penang, for instance, is E&O Berhad, and they've created a community garden in their parks. And so together with the Consumer Association Penang's Natural Farming Unit, so they come over, they teach the kids about worms, they teach the kids about how to grow food, and then we build the space together. We grow food together. You were squirming when I said worms.
I mean, yeah. You hardly see anyone talking about worms in such a gleeful sense. I would talk about worms.
But yeah, it can be done. To your question, corporates can get involved. I think with developers as well, they need to start relooking how they design our neighbourhoods to include more edible landscapes as well, and to bring in more of a homestead feel within a neighbourhood maybe. Mm. And things like that, yeah, can definitely work.
So if I wanted to start a garden in my home, what is, I mean, do I need a lot of space? Because I guess the idea of saying growing a banana tree or a papaya tree
on my apartment balcony, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it requires a lot of space.
You don't have to. I mean, I wouldn't recommend you grow your banana on your balcony or anything like that. But I
don't just want to grow like mint and basil, right? I mean, it's so boring.
But that said, I think one of our participants from Hong Kong who came for our courses at one point, she took back a banana sucker all the way to Hong Kong, and it did grow on her balcony.
Yeah, so I mean, it's about giving possible. It the environment that it needs, yeah. I suppose, you know, enough water and whatnot. But that's where community gardens come in. I mean, if you don't have space on your balcony, I mean, that's why too, I started on my balcony in Singapore, and then you kind of realize, okay, there's just a limit. There's only so much you can do. Then now I'm on a rooftop at a shared office space in Singapore, in South Bridge Road. And then now there's going to be the community garden. So the community garden gives you that space, and it's about collective effort. You cannot do a lot of this on your own, and it would be great if you can come together with other people, other gardeners and teachers to also do it.
Shaolin, you said there were lots of young people as well who make up the demographic. But from what I've read and what I've learned, it seems like it's very time-consuming, urban gardening. I mean, the idea of composting, the idea of fighting off bugs without using pesticide, you know, it requires a lot of time and effort, and you know, people run two income households these days. What have you found? Do young Malaysians, urban Malaysians, actually have the time to do all of this?
Yeah, there are some young people who come to our garden and tell us, oh, my father will enjoy this, so can I drop off my father here so that he can spend his evenings and help you out and stuff like that. So there's that demographic. And there are also young people who, I guess, you're either in it or you're not. So there are people who have come through our doors, who have done the courses, done the workshops, and then just completely left their jobs in the city, started something else in the rural area, and basically became farmers lah. So that is that demographic as well. People who are wanting to live a different lifestyle, who really want to grow their own food for a commercial purpose and pretty much full on. So that is there is that.
That's
so
pretty amazing. It seems like we're shifting back to agriculture, although not in a manner that we would have imagined.
Well, no, but is that a realistic thing? So if I'm an urban gardener in my house, and just say I'm not in an apartment, just say I have some landed property, will I be able to actually grow enough to sustain myself and then sell a little bit on the side?
To sell a bit on the side, I think it depends on what you grow. And with plants, you've got two different types. You've got annuals, which you keep sowing year by year. And then you have perennials, where you grow once and then you let it grow forever. Or
garden
maybe for
lingo
three,
this,
four.
Garden lingo.
Annuals and perennials, I like it.
For 3 to 4 years, then at least you can just harvest it all the time. So these are things like all your ulams, all the very local stuff like daun kasom, daun gadok, mint, like you mentioned earlier.
Kangkong,
sweet potato leaves, Malabar spinach. So there are a lot of things that can actually grow continuously without putting too much effort in. And it's a matter of finding out what these vegetables are. So if we can do that, plant a perennial garden instead of focusing on a very westernized ideal of an annual garden. Because fruiting vegetables are really hard. I mean, even from our perspective, we spend about one day a week in the garden. One full day.
You spend one day in the week. I would have imagined you were in that garden 24/7, like every day.
If we were, then we probably wouldn't be able to eat a lot of things.
That's
as well.
That's very true. Yes.
Still need a bit of bread and butter. So with us, the way that we work in the garden, if we were there full time, then we would just be gardeners lah. But we're not full time gardeners. So we're there once a week. Volunteers come, they help us out, and we eat once a week from the garden for lunch. All your simple stuff. So like I said earlier, perennials are really possible.
Now, I think this is interesting. And is this where you come in, Nova, in the designing? Because when you talk about growing the perennials, you know, so you're not talking about a Western garden, no tomatoes, and you're talking about, you know, what did you say, sawin? I mean, I don't have a pretty picture in my mind.
Ah, okay. We want it to be inspiring and look beautiful
as
well.
Aesthetics matter.
Yeah, yeah.
People
are
shallow.
It does. No. It's not. It is very important. And if we're talking about urban gardening, you do want to inspire other people who come to your space as well. And design plays a big element to that. There's also this thing where we're going back to using some of our fruit trees, and we're also looking at ways of upcycling materials so that you can create nice structures. So your garden doesn't just become a space where you grow food, but it's also like in Eat Shoots and Roots, man. I've been to their place many times. It's a place of gathering. So you've got your food, your hob there, your area to meet and things like that. So there's so many ways to do this. Like it can look beautiful as well. Just a little bit of thought and design involved.
So talk to us about, I guess, government involvement and the top-down approach versus the grassroots approach. Oh, okay. That sounds ominous, Nova.
I can, from my personal experience, I've been working mostly with the private sector and with communities, so I have not really worked with local governments, so I can't really say much. I think
well let's hear what the Subang Jaya City Council has to say. Here's Azlina Mat Salim again about that.
So what do you think of these two different approaches? You know, like we have Its Shoots and Roots, we have Cultivate Central, and we have local councils like MPSJ who are thriving to work on edible gardens in the city. So what do you think of these two comparisons?
Well, I think you need it both ways. Because if we do it top down, okay, I give you an example. We did a Dusun community once. Like they did, they're doing it in Selayang now, but we have done that. We choose a few land and we ask the residents to plant the fruit trees, and then we said, you have to tend to that. Okay. That means we are ordering them to do it. We put a signboard, Dusun community. But after 1 to 2 years, it just went left unattended. Because they didn't want it. But we just found land. It was empty. Was green. So we thought, why not we put fruit trees there? So they didn't want it. So you see, I think it's good that you have this grassroots organization, because they actually are in connection with the people who wants this. who are willing to learn. So I think you need it both ways. I met Ishut Tenrut when we met at Ministry of Agriculture. And I'm happy to see them. So I see in the future we can have programs and we can be together with the residents. I have to tell you, we don't have the manpower to educate people. My work are more to managing the city. I think it's very good to have the grassroots organization. And I see in future, they may ask funding from the government agency. I don't see nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So you are positive about sort of collaboration.
Yeah.
Azlina Ahmad Salem on, I guess, the collaborations between city councils and community-run organizations. I think she just handed the baton over to you guys, right? It's the all-too-famous line of, well, we don't have enough manpower, so you guys, go ahead.
Well, I think, to be fair, when you come together and you decide to urban garden as a community, there's a lot that you can walk away as a community. The self-reliance, the self-organization is great. The only thing that will require help is, like we were talking earlier, you know, can I use this land? Can I get access to water? Can I, you know, things like that. If that can be facilitated, then I think that's all communities want. They want clear-cut answers as to what can be done, how big, how much, and some help in terms of resources, maybe.
And when it comes to top-down, I suppose it doesn't necessarily have to be the government approach. You know, what I think of, I'm sure you saw this, Michelle Obama does her own gardening.
That's
something
right.
Something like that. So, you know, when you talk about top-down, how important is it to have perhaps role models to lead the way? Or because you're targeting individuals, does it not really matter?
I think role models are good for inspiring, but at the same time, you have to have an innate interest in gardening in the first place. Because, like Azlina said, they started a couple of kebun community projects, whereby in the first few months they managed to get a whole bunch of people. But then at the end of the year, there were probably like two or three people who were still doing it. Yeah. So interest does die down after a while if you're not completely committed to it, or if you don't see value in it. Then you probably will not do it after that, you know.
Yeah, because I don't think there are many people who go out there with that innate interest to begin with. You sort of have to develop it. I would feel that way, certainly.
No, absolutely. And I think commitment is one thing, but then having you design the space, yes. You design what to grow, when to grow, how to grow, yes. But you've got to design programs around the space too. You've got to get people coming back to the space. When we had our first town hall meeting for our community garden in Singapore, we said we're not just looking for gardeners. We're looking for artists, we're looking for teachers, we're looking for photographers, we're looking for someone who can work the website well, who's good in social media, stuff like that too, because not everybody really just wants to garden, and it can get, I mean, for those who are not interested, then you're just zoning out a bunch of people who could be involved in their own sort of unique way.
Certainly. Yeah.
So before we let you go, I need to ask, how does one get started? So if anyone listening to the show goes, hey, I want to grow my own avocados.
Vegetable. Now let's be positive. If everyone listening to
listening to the show suddenly goes, hey, I want to grow my own avocados, what do we do? How much is the initial outlay cost? What do they have to do?
Oh, cost-wise, it's very cheap. You know, start container gardening. Okay, look that up. There's lots of resources online. So in that sense, that is covered. In terms of, because I started with composting, I would really highly recommend composting, because that would really help you nourish your fruits later on. And then, you know, join groups. Like, I'm not in KL a lot, but join groups like Eat Roots and Roots, because, you know, they run really great workshops and things like that in PJ, and get your hands dirty. So, very simple.
Yeah. I mean, like, every weekend, we usually invite volunteers to just come and get their hands dirty with us. And from time to time, we also organize events. Just yesterday, we had this Sayur Day event. So Chef Darren Teo, who's a chef lecturer at KDU, he came to cook produce from our garden and serve it to a table full of 12 people who ate very, very interesting meals from the garden. So
very interesting meaning?
Very interesting, as in it was like a slab of taro, which you normally would not have cooked the way he did. He basically cooked it in soil with coffee beans. And then put some Hong Kong vinegar sauce on the side. And then it was a very beautiful presentation. So,
okay. Sounds lovely.
Macam Michelin star.
Yeah, you know.
All right, we've been talking urban edible gardening with Shaolin and Nova Siciliana. Thank you, ladies, so much for all of your insights.
Our pleasure. Thank you for having us.
You can download this podcast on bfm.my and hopefully it'll spark your interest in growing your own food. You've been listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.